Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. My guest today is Naomi Tapia. I've been following her work for several years now on social media, and it's truly a pleasure and an honor to have her in this space today. Naomi Tapia is a first-generation college graduate and an associate marriage and family therapist in the state of California. Naomi has presented at the first annual BIPOC Eating Disorders Conference on Eating Disorders Among Latinas. She also sits on the board of Body Reborn, a nonprofit eating disorder organization that serves BIPOC folks. Naomi is a published contributor. Her writing can be found in the American Counseling Association's Counselor Self-Care book. She is also a new part-time lecturer teaching at California State University Fullerton. Naomi is passionate about body image, eating disorders, family dynamics, and the Latinx, Latinx comunidad. Bienvenida, Naomi.
Gracias, doctora.
Es un placer tenerte. Hay muchas cosas que no sabía de ti. I did not know that you were on the board for Body Reborn and that you're also a part-time lecturer. So I was like, wow.
I'm actually barely starting, so I'm going to be a part-time lecturer starting in January. So I'm really, really excited for that. Un poco nerviosa, but, you know, espero que se me pase y se me calmen los nervios.
Claro que sí. Y aquí me tienes a mí if you have any questions, you know. I've been in the education field for a while. I'm not saying, like, you know, que soy una experta, pero I've been in the, as a professor in higher ed for almost 20 years.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, when I accepted the offer and even applying, I was actually thinking of you a lot because I was like, wow, I wanted to do this. I'm teaching undergrad and I wanted to do it because I didn't have a Latina professor until I was in graduate school and it was only one. And that was my only experience ever. And so I was like, I really want to be just a representation.
That's right.
Que si se puede, right?
So. Sí, and you got this. You're smart. You have so much experience and you have lived experience and you have practicum, you know, like, come on, like, these students are going to be in the best hands. So I'm excited for you for next year.
Thank you. I'll keep you updated because I'm sure it's going to be a little bit messy at first, but
it's all good. Hey, that's part of being human, right?
Yes, it
Perfecto.
Is.
Pues gracias por estar aquí, Naomi. Why don't you begin by sharing with our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Naomi. I am the eldest Latina daughter in my family. There's four of us. I am a learner, a balancer. I am imperfect and discovering myself continually. I'm also a therapist if you want to add it in there and not just for, you know, the community but also for my family, it seems like oftentimes.
That is so common. Yes,
so that's a little bit about me.
Gracias. You're a therapist and like I'm just so happy to be in community with you. I've been learning also a lot from you on your social media work. And I would love for us to talk about why you do this work, right? Body image, eating disorders among Latinas. And before we talk about that, like, how do you get to that work? Like, if you want to share a little bit about your own, like, upbringing.
¿De dónde empezamos? Yeah, I think specifically what brings, I think, a lot of therapists to the work is our own shit, right? Our own trauma. And so I think mine started at a really young age. And of course, now looking back, I can see all of the moments in my life where I was like, okay, that was a pivotal thing. But as I was going through it, I mean, I didn't really understand it. So I, and you know, in case you want to put a trigger warning, but there's, you know, I was assaulted, unfortunately, by a family member at a very, very young age. I was 6 years old. And so from that point, now looking back, I can see that was really the beginning of me disconnecting from my body. By age 7, I was having a lot of panic attacks. At the time, I didn't know what it was, right? So I was just like locking myself in the bathroom, hyperventilating, throwing up, shaking, and really outright refusing to go to school as a kid because I just couldn't understand what was happening in my body. Y pues mis papás no sabían tampoco. So they were like, te vamos a llevar a la sobadora. And so, like, our neighbor was a sobadora. So, like, every other day, pretty much, me estaba sobando la panza. And I was like, and you know, sometimes it would help and sometimes it wouldn't.
Of course.
And so, kind of moving through that, you know, on top of that, I lived in a one bedroom apartment with six people, but it was in Burbank, so it was a pretty like affluent area. And I went to a school where there weren't too many Latinos specifically who were like me. So Spanish was my first language. Now that I'm getting older and like have gained a lot more access to education, se me está olvidando el español, but Spanish was my first language, and so I had to learn English through school. And so I think that was also kind of a way that I was starting to disconnect from like my true self, because I had to only speak English at school. So kind of moving through that, I was also like chubby growing up, and so a lot of the people that I, you know, spent my childhood with were not my size. Y me acuerdo teniendo like it was like a pool party kind of thing. Pues no tanto the pool because there wasn't a pool. It was like running through sprinklers. But
That's
they
funny.
invited me
I
over.
know.
They invited me over and I was like, okay, pero no tenía traje de baño. So and they were like, no, we're just gonna let you borrow one of ours. And I was like, oh, okay. And I ripped it. I went to the bathroom and me acuerdo so vividly, like, because you know, the mirror was up here. I like couldn't even see myself. So I climbed up on their sink. Oh my gosh, I hope they don't remember this. I climbed up on their sink and I looked at myself in the mirror and like I saw it like stretching. And that was just such a vivid memory. And like I walked out and you know, they were like, oh, it's fine, it's not a big deal. But to me, it was like
The end of the
holy
world.
shit. Yes. And I don't know, tenía like maybe 7 or 8 at that time. So all of this was accumulating over time. Luego, you know, I moved, I went into high school, and in high school for an attention of somebody that I liked, you know, empecé que, oh, they like someone who's really skinny, so maybe I should be really skinny. And empecé like some disordered eating stuff, right? Eventually I joined some sports, one of them being cheerleading. And that's kind of where it started going downhill. You know, I didn't even know what an eating disorder was, right? So I went through and but it was bulimia. I was forcing myself to throw up. And so I got to college, you know, went through the whole thing. And I was also experiencing different traumas when I was in college. So I lost my abuelita, and then I lost my mom. And we also went through like a lot of family like trauma together, not just through loss, but like we got into a pretty traumatic car accident. And so I think throughout the layers and journey of my life, it led me to pretty much get paid for what I was already doing in my family.
That's true.
which is, just being a therapist. And so there was actually a pivotal point when I was in high school, porque, my parents couldn't figure out what's going on. I was still having panic attacks, and that's just kind of something that I was like, everyone does this. I fell into a really bad depression. Y pues mi mamá thought that I was sick. Like, she was like, you've been sick for a long time, So she took me to the doctor, y me acuerdo que el doctor like wrote on a piece of paper the number for the behavioral health line and was like, this is what it is. And my mom like looked at me and she was like, wow, they prescribed you a phone number. Like, this is where we have to go. We didn't know what therapy was still. This was at Kaiser before. So Maywell Kaiser, and that's where I had my first therapist. I only saw her for a couple sessions because we couldn't really afford to pay the copay and stuff, but she really helped me fully understand. That was the first time I had heard the word anxiety. That was the first time I had heard the word panic attack, sexual assault, all of that stuff. Y entonces, desde allí, after that, I was like, what are you doing? Like, what is this job called?
You're like, I like
Like,
this.
yes, I was like, I want to talk to people all day. And so she was like, oh, I'm an LMFT. And I was like, okay. And I wrote it down on a little piece of paper. Y desde entonces, like throughout high school, I looked up like what is LMFT because I still didn't fucking know. And I saw a licensed marriage and family therapist. Y cada vez that like, I got into college, and they'd be like, oh, what do you want to major in? And I'm like, I don't know, whatever is gonna get me to this on the little papelito.
You're like, that's the end goal.
Yes. And so that's in a nutshell how I got here.
Oh, antes que nada, te quiero agradecer por platicar con nosotros, for sharing your experience, and by talking about it, feeling safe one to talk about it and normalize, right, that a lot of us, experience sexual assault at a very young age, or as teenagers, and I'm included in this conversation, and I did talk about it in an earlier episode. So I just want to tell you that I see you, and I am holding space for you and for everyone who has been, sexually assaulted, and the impact that this can have on your well-being. And como nos acabas de platicar on the unfolding of your relationship with food and body image. So I just want to acknowledge this. Thank you, Naomi, for sharing with our audience, because desafortunadamente es tan común en nuestras comunidades.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to ask you, because it was in high school that, well, it was throughout your education, right, that you're trying to, in some ways, to feel like a sense of belonging and acceptance, right, in school, and part of it is losing a little bit of your cultural ties. It's what it kind of seemed to gather, right, the language or other things, and that's just kind of really normal for a lot of youth, right? We're trying to find ourselves and our identity, so going through those struggles, identity and body image. And it was not until high school, it seems like that was the pivotal moment, right, when you took therapy y te diste cuenta, like, all this shit that I've been going through is like, no estoy loca, right? It's all this shit that has happened, right? That isn't that liberating to have the language to understand your experiences?
Words, liberating is the only word that I think could sum up the way that that moment was. I'm getting emotional. Oh my gosh.
And you can cry, let it out. We're here
Oh,
holding space for you.
girl, that's another thing. I'm like, me getting emotional in front of other people, still working on that.
Aww.
But
Poco a
yeah,
poquito.
it was extremely liberating. It felt extremely validating because at that point, my dad had given up on trying to figure out what's wrong. En su mente, yo era la dramática,
Sí.
la que siempre quiere atención, And so, having just knowing that other people were in the same space as I was, It was hurtful because I never wanted anybody to feel the way that I was feeling, but it was also extremely validating.
Yes. For someone who's listening, who has gone through similar experience, who perhaps hasn't talked about it, what do you suggest? What advice do you have for them? And you have both hats, your own personal experience, lo que te hubiera gustado, y, as a therapist.
I think it would just be, I don't know if there's really advice. It's more just knowing, like, aquí estamos, you know? Like you were saying, desafortunadamente, there's many of us. Y no estás están solos, you know? Because it can feel really isolating. And it can feel like we're trapped. And anxiety, I think, thrives on the feelings of being trapped and alone. And so, hopefully, just knowing that, aunque te sientas solo, sola, you know, there's so many of us that have felt that way and might continue to feel that way to some extent. Pero en saber que hay más de nosotros, like, we can all be in a circle holding hands.
Yes, kind of normalizing the conversation, having safe spaces and safe people that you can trust, es importante. Y nunca es tarde para platicar de esto. It's never too late, you all. Ahora, Naima, platícanos entonces, when you went off to college, you talked a little bit about like high school and then now college. So you're like, that's what I want. And I love that you're like, I don't know what I need to do to get there, but that's the end goal, right? So, how was your college experience? Did you stay in the area? Did you move out? Like, and how did that also shape like your own experience with food and your body?
Yeah. Oh, I moved out and being the oldest, you know, my dad was pissed. I remember like antes to my dad, siempre like give me pretty much a presentation of why you want to go out with this friend, how long you're going to be out, right? And so he made me do that same thing for when I went to college because there was a local community college where I lived. And so he was like, why don't you just go there? Like, and then you're gonna stay here and help your mom and you know all the things. And I was like, because there they don't offer what I want to do. And he was like, well, you could figure it out later. So I had like this whole spiel of like, here are all the reasons why I need to leave. And you know, ultimately he was like, no, you can't go because we don't have money. And I was like, I'll fucking figure it out. And he was like, still no. Pero mi mamá, she was bien aventurera, and so she would always just be like, go live your life. Nunca vas a aprender si no estás viviendo fuera de la casa. And so she pretty much told me, like, fuck what your dad says, like, let's
I
like
love it. Say that again. It's so powerful. She's a
really?
feminist.
Oh, you have me.
She was
No.
challenging patriarchy. I love your mom.
My mom was the baddest bitch for real. She literally, but that's their own dynamic. Pero siempre se metían en problemas ella y mi papá because my dad would be like, no, esto y esto. Mom would be like, man, fuck you. And like, she would do what she wanted. And so she pushed me. Y me trajo a ver. So I moved to Orange County. And that was a big cultural shift because I moved from Burbank to a small, like, fucking pueblito. And it's called Hesperia. And it's on the way to Vegas.
How
I
convenient.
know. It's like so, it was, well, at the time, it's expanding now, but at the time, it was so small. There were no street lights, there's no sidewalks, nothing. Era pura tierra. And just like casas that were like an acre or two separated. So it was crazy. And a lot of, because it was affordable, like, you know, a lot of Black and brown folks live there. And so when I moved, I picked Fullerton, honestly, because I didn't even know what university to go to. And I saw my friends applying to like Cal State Long Beach, Cal State Fullerton. And they had like siblings and family members who had already gone to college. So I was like, well, fuck, I guess that's the place to be. So And I applied. And when I moved to Orange County, that was a fucking shift. There are so many white people here. Y eso no me lo esperaba because, I mean, I couldn't afford. I moved out when I was 17 just because of the way that my birthday was. And so I was trying to get different jobs. And like, it's not like in Hesperia where it's like there's like a mom and pop restaurant that they're like, yeah, fuck it, we'll, just tip you out or something. No, here, I try to apply to multiple places and they're like, you're not 18 yet, you can't work. And I'm like, okay, but your girl is struggling. So anyway, I figured it out. I moved out here, I found a roommate. From there, it was so much, unfortunately, still of me trying to shrink myself to fit in, especially because of all of the white folk that were here.
Oof. Gracias. I have no doubt that so many first gen, oldest siblings can relate to your story. Ya sabemos la responsabilidad always when you're the eldest. And when you're first gen, like you are literally like validating the struggle or so many first gen Latinas que no se pueden ir a la universidad. Porque su papá no quiere. And let's call it, right? We're talking about patriarchy, right? And el machismo del hombre, like it breaks my heart. That's why, I love the work I do as a professor, and I challenge my students and say, like, you have to choose you have to choose your career, you have to choose the major you want, not what your family wants and the university. So many of my students got full rides to transfer to go somewhere else y no se pueden ir o no pueden ir a esos lugares porque está muy lejos. So let's name it. This is talking about controlling woman, controlling women, controlling like your woman's bodies and their, basically sexuality, todo lo demás. So like, you sharing your story is validating for so many that the struggle is real. Like going off to college on your own, oof. ¿Qué va a decir la familia? Ya ahí anda de loca.
¿Quién se cree? That
¿Quién
was
se
one of the big
cree?
ones.
No, sí, saber estudiar, and la crítica, that's so much shame, so much criticism from our families. And like you said, you were dealing with that. So we're like, we're naming that, you're dealing with those struggles, and then you're in a predominantly white space as a woman of color in a bigger body who's freaking poor, who can't even get a job, right? So like these are layers. And then you shared all I wanted to do was shrink, right? So folks know that these systemic issues have an impact on your well-being and your relationship with your body. It's not something que nace de uno. Son cosas externas de la sociedad. It's societal influences.
And we're so convinced to believe that we have to do it to survive. And it's ridiculous. I think about that time and how my eating disorder really was at its peak my freshman year of college, because that was the only way that I thought that I could control things. I felt like I don't have any other choice. Like, I can't get a job. I'm struggling. What am I supposed to do? Like, I don't look like these other girls. I felt different.
And this is why you're so passionate about the work that you do, right?
Absolutely. I think from that point, it was actually ironically through the eating disorder. I was looking for podcasts of like, how to help me like love my body and like work out and all this stuff. And I stumbled across, honestly, ya ni me acuerdo. It was like a podcast by like this older white lady. I don't know. But she was giving the very like,
Diet culture stuff.
no, the opposite. She was
Oh,
like,
okay, good.
body positivity, like,
Okay.
love yourself and blah, blah, blah. But then she would keep talking about like rich white people things. And
You're
I'd be
like,
like,
I can't relate to you, lady.
right. And so then I was like listening to like half of the podcast because I was like, this feels like half good. And then through there, I found Christy Harrison's Food Psych. And And that's when I was like, and I remember so vividly being at the gym in college on the treadmill, and I listened to Chrissy Harrison, and I got off of the treadmill and I was like, what is this? This is a whole different world. And that's when I started to question, like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this every day? Why am I not eating this? Like, and that's when I started thinking, and that happened to be at the same time that I was getting the most backlash from my family, because that's when I started gaining weight.
So we're praising you because you were shrinking.
They were praising me because I was shrinking, but that's all. And at the same time, that's when I was like, I don't have to shrink anymore. So I was in a very conflicting space. And I didn't know what to believe, because until that point, I mean, at that point, I was like 18.
Yeah.
And I was convinced, like, was, you know, my parents, they just know what's right. And this other random lady, but she went to school and she's a, you know, registered dietitian. And so she also was probably right. And I was just in a very big space of not knowing who to trust with my body.
Yes. Oof. Yes, absolutely. And if we can like even like sometimes even say it, a veces because of the social currency of losing weight and being thin and what that means and giving you access and acceptance. And maybe deep down, did you believe like my family es como me van a querer o me van a aceptar? ¿Lo pensaste conscientemente o tal vez? I mean, if you can.
Yeah, cada rato, unfortunately. I'm so happy to say that, you know, I've talked a lot with my dad and we're in a completely different space now. And before my mom passed, I also got an opportunity to like work through some things with her. And so they're in a different space now. And at the time, they were not understanding. And so I was so exhausted at that point that I was like, how many times can I have the same conversation? And so I had almost like felt accepted defeat, like, yeah, no van a cambiar, así son. And so the only way to make them super proud is to stay in this small body, because they love me when I was in the small body and they love me for going to college, but they want both, and just one or the other is not enough now.
Gracias por esa honestidad, porque entre más lo decimos, the more like we say it and share it, then other folks know like, oh, you know, feeling this way or having these thoughts is actually not, it's not foreign, you know, it's so common for so many folks. And again, just because it's common doesn't make it like it should be this way, right? We shouldn't feel this way or think these thoughts that losing weight will give you like more love or acceptance. Pero me da mucho gusto saber que you were able to talk to your mom, you know, and your father. Can you share with us when you were at the university and then, you know, doing all your training, what have you learned? Because now you're an expert on Latina eating disorders. So, ¿qué me puedes decir de este tema?
That it continues to break my heart how prominent the theme of our bodies not feeling like our own is in our culture. Like when I said at that point I didn't know who to trust with my body, now I know that I can trust myself with my body, and I didn't know that. And unfortunately, that's one of the things that I see the most, is like there's so much that, you know, as Latina folks, especially women identifying, like we have learned and been conditioned to give our bodies to our families, give our bodies to the people around us, because we've learned to serve, right? It's the Marianismo. And so I think being able to, one, just simply acknowledge that our bodies are our own is so powerful.
Oof, yes, absolutely. And let's name these institutions, right? why do we feel that these bodies don't, that our body doesn't belong to us? One, the religion, right, plays such a big role. I don't know if you were raised in any faith or any religious beliefs, but, you know, I can tell you from my own personal experience, and even as a sociologist, you know, the role that religion plays in like save yourself until marriage, or, you know, like basically what you just shared, you know, we disembody ourselves, like el nuestro cuerpo como que no nos pertenece. Y más si tienes traumas, if you have had sexual traumas, and there's that also disembodiment too, right? So religion plays a big role as an institution. The family plays another big role, from even the basic stuff of ¿qué te vas a poner? ¿Qué te puedes poner? ¿Qué no te puedes poner? ¿Con quién vas a salir? ¿Con quién no puedes salir? ¿Cómo te vas a peinar? If you're gonna wear makeup, like everything, all that, like social surveillance and social control that happens in our households contributes to not feeling ownership of our bodies.
100%. It reminds me back, right, of the presentations that I had to give to my dad.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not me. It's not my choice ever. Nothing is ever my choice. And so, yeah, there's so much power in just being able to recognize, like, mm-hmm. I have choices. This is my body. And I also want to validate the fact that, like, it's not as easy as mm-hmm. just owning it, right? Like,
that's right.
It took me a long time to own it mm-hmm. for all of these reasons, mm-hmm. but especially because it felt scary to me to really sit and own my body after mm-hmm. the trauma that I had experienced in it. Like, you know, as a child, and then unfortunately in college, I was also sexually assaulted. And so I think, unfortunately, multiple times. And so I think that having the different layers of, like, when I try to be in my body, it is not safe. It can feel like an extremely dangerous place and an extremely dangerous thing to own.
What would you say would be some things to do to begin that process and that journey for folks who can relate to your experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one, finding people who can really truly hold space, right? And it's different for everybody, because a veces hasta mi mejor amiga really fucking sucks at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think it's about finding the people or the person, the community
mm-hmm.
that can sit there and do this, what you're doing right now with me, which is just like inhaling truth and like exhaling the stress that comes with the truth,
mm-hmm.
And just being able to say, and I think part of owning it, right, is being able to say, if I can only sit in my body and own it for 30 seconds today, that's okay.
Yeah, me encanta eso. And it's gonna look different all the time. And even like you said, like even with the people that you trust the most, sometimes can say harmful things porque pues no saben, ¿verdad? No se dan cuenta. But also as a therapist, and I'm sure you can attest to this, is like therapy is important. And if that therapist is helpful, if not, then you could look for another one, you know. Students, college students, campuses have the wellness center. They have different names, right? Where you can sign up for therapy, or, you know, they have these services. Yes, there's definitely gaps, but take that first step. You know, I've walked many students to the wellness center. I always tell them at the beginning of the semester, these are all the resources in campus. We have a wellness center. They offer therapy. There's a wait list, but like, don't get discouraged. And I'll get a handful. Like, can you go with me? Or someone like, I'd rather talk to you, me dicen. I'd rather talk to you. Y les digo, pero no, that I'm not a therapist, okay? I can hold space for you, pero no soy una therapist. So find people that you trust. That's basically the take home point.
Yes. Yeah. And you're right. It looks so different, right? I think that luckily at universities, there are at different college campuses, there's different, you know, kinds of resources that honestly are incredible, even though there are gaps, because most people who don't have access or are not in these institutions don't typically have access to the same resources. So I think it is a really big gift to be able to have that. So what you're doing is incredible. I've only ever walked two students, but they were like, it was such a huge relief. So I know that those students feel probably immensely grateful and connected to you.
Y I'm sure que todos los que vas a tener next year, okay? So I'm cheering you. I'm already cheering you for next semester. Platícanos un poquito más los retos, like in terms of like your practice, if you're able to share. Of course, it's, you know, you don't have to share your clients, no, pero like what are things that you notice in your practice with Latinas and eating disorders? What are common threads, common things?
Yeah, one of the most common things is not recognizing that there are eating disorders.
So how do you, let's begin there. So it's cómo identificas, how do you move from disorder eating to an eating disorder?
Yes, so disorder eating is more of like the little things, like not little, right? They're still big things, but I think the things that are not fully impacting your day-to-day choices, the way that you live your life. Whereas an eating disorder, it's like you are now making choices daily that are shifting the way that you would normally live your life because of this eating disorder, right? And so oftentimes, most of the Latinas that I've worked with, they come in because they're like, oh, I just want to be confident. I want to work on my body image. Nowhere do they ever think that they have an eating disorder or even disordered eating things, right? Like, porque las dietas y todo eso, like that's part of the culture, right? Like, watch what you eat, all the mixed messaging of like, comete toda la comida because se va a enojar tu abuelita.
I'm part of that plate, the clean plate club.
Yes. Pero al mismo tiempo, like, no te comas todo. O vas a querer otro plato, no te has llenado.
I know. First te dicen, cómete toda la comida, mira, y bla, bla. And then, ay, ¿cómo eres dragona? ¿Cómo yes. comes? ¿Vas a engordar? It's like, wait, what? It's like mixed messages.
Yes, it's very, very confusing. And so oftentimes that's kind of where I start because that is such a common thing, right? Is like, what the fuck is my relationship with food? And like, do I even think about having a relationship with food whatsoever? And so usually I'll be like, okay, like when was the first, you know, time that you can think about where you really thought about yourself in your body? And kind of moving through that, right? Oftentimes it has a lot to do with family, with moms, with tías, las freaking tías que a veces nunca saben. Van a callarse.
¿Verdad? Nada más están metiendo su cuchara.
And so kind of moving through those spaces that eventually we get to a space where we can recognize, like, are these choices impacting your daily life? Or have you struggled? Like, a lot of the times the people that I work with might not have a current eating disorder, but have had an eating disorder in the past that went undiagnosed. Whether that's because they were, you know, bulimic, they were restricting heavily, whatever the case was, or maybe they had, you know, just a tendency to not want to eat because of trauma that wasn't necessarily to shrink, right? But more so of like a protective mechanism. And so I think that there's so much there that oftentimes goes overlooked because unfortunately, I don't think that our culture as Latinos really allows us to have conversations about food, regarding food, over food that is not like familial and like joyous.
Or shaming,
yes. But like no truth, right? Like there's no moments where we can get together and say like, oh, that specific food is triggering to me because this one time 3 years ago when we had this one, right? Like we don't have those conversations. It's either you're not eating, you're eating too much, estás flaca, estás gorda, whatever. Or like, ira, vamos a cocinar todos juntos. Sí. But like, that's, I don't know. There needs to be more depth and more truth about these conversations.
That's so true. Yes, that's definitely something that we all need to continue to have in our families. So that's one thing, right? Noticing that they're coming to you for body confidence y todo eso, self-love, y te das cuenta que maybe they have disorder eating or eating disorders. What's another challenge that you also see in the right now with Latinas?
Yeah, I interestingly just had a conversation with a student about self-care. Or lack thereof amongst Latinas and Latina folks in general, just because Oftentimes I think that Latinas we're good at doing the self-care with like getting our hair done, getting our nails done, going out for some drinks, whatever. But that deeper work of setting boundaries with family, I personally don't like calling them boundaries. I haven't come up with a different word, but I guess just learning how the dynamic is with each person's family, right? Being able to say no, being able to really like invest in yourself and your growth as a person, that is something that is still, and minimizing. So many Latinas still minimize themselves, their experiences, their knowledge.
So,
And
yes, the self-care, right? And I think that also we've been really socialized to care for others and look for others that it becomes difficult sometimes to even care for ourselves, right? The imposter syndrome. You just
no me
shared.
digas.
No, I know, es muy común.
Es muy común, and it's something clearly I'm still working on, but I think that's something that I see, because so many of the Latina folks that I work with are so fucking cool. They are, they're other therapists, they are psychologists, they're teachers, they're lawyers, and they still are struggling with like, how do I feel like I even deserve to be here? That's another layer, right?
Yes.
Self-care and humility. And I think that also links to religion, like you were saying, right? But that layer of humility, and like, when does that become almost toxic and detrimental to like you just showing up and being unapologetically
And
yourself?
then you do show up, or you try to show up unapologetic and, and honor and celebrate yourself for your accomplishments. Ay, no, pues qué presumida. Oh, and then the shaming. So it's like, de cualquier manera te van a criticar. Entonces, si sabes que te van a criticar, pues que te critiquen for being unapologetically you.
I'm like, and live studio audience, what do we say? Fuck being calladita.
Yes, oh yes. And so to honor your time, I have like two more questions. One is, you are part of a board on Body Reborn. So now, as a professional, what can you tell me about the field and the eating disorder field, right? So there's some advocates who are like, fuck the eating disorder field. They're not doing shit. They're like completely, silent about all these other issues. And then other folks might be like, eating disorder centers have helped me, So there's different perspectives. Being you in this professional space and being on the board, what can you tell me about the field and for folks who might be skeptical about even seeking services?
I want to validate the skepticism. It's normal, it's natural, and especially for BIPOC folk, like we've learned to live our life that way. So it's totally normal to feel skeptical and weary. I think that all of it truly is valid, right? Like I think that there are parts of the eating disorder field that are toxic and need to change. And I think some are ready and some are not. To be frank, right? There's so many layers, there's so much nuance to the field. And I think that there is hope for the way that it is going. I don't think we're there yet. I also think that treatment needs to be expanded into more than just therapy and the traditional treatment that we've seen. I think that treatment and healing needs to be holistic. We need to be able to have community care, community resources available that don't look like the standard treatment modalities that exist right now.
And for those who do not know, what are these traditional treatment modalities?
Yeah, so typically it's called something like residential treatment. And so people go, and one, it's not very accessible because it costs freaking thousands and thousands of dollars. Typically, you go to this place for about 30 to 45 days, and the whole concept is that you're receiving therapy constantly, you're in groups, and you're socializing with other people who are in the similar struggle, particularly in eating disorders, and you're finding tools and ways to like navigate what that looks like and, you know, how to feel better, etc. One, I mean, these treatment centers literally cost like 20 grand a month or more. So one, that's already inaccessible. Mm-hmm. But two, the approach that they use, because mm-hmm. it is kind of like on a timeline, right? Like you imagine a cohort, there is not really space to make things individualistic. And so they have like, this is the treatment that should work, and here are all the tools, now go. And so for some people, it works because it happens to fit their specific scenario. For most other people, it doesn't work because their circumstances are different. And also because residential is a very unique experience. And so it doesn't necessarily mimic people's everyday life. And so the tools that you learn might help in that moment. But once you go home into a completely different environment that doesn't resemble that, I mean, honestly, like that kind of privilege that you have being in there, it typically doesn't work. And so they're not always teaching mm-hmm. Coping methods that are
yes. Yeah, life. No, thank you for sharing this. You know, and that financial ties in into other resources, which is time, right? Who has the time? Like, what do you have to give up? Do you have to give up that month of school, of work, and who's going to pay for your bills? You know, so this doesn't work for a lot of working class BIPOC folks. You know, it's not accessible, like you said, and it's very individualistic, right? And, you know, as BIPOC folks and as Indigenous women, we think of community care and connecting to the land, connecting with the ancestors. I don't see this anywhere
<No. laughs>
in this type of model, Western model, honestly.
Yeah, it's extremely, extremely Westernized. And honestly, it like breaks my heart that like their form of cultural competent care is like bringing in a speaker to talk about the fact that maybe somewhere there's healing with like the land and Indigenous folks and ancestors, maybe one day, possibly.
It's like so far-fetched for that, like, you know, and that's, I think, I see, at least in the undieting space, you know, I guess I would say I'm one of them, and there's other folks too who are talking about this of like connecting with their cultural background, connecting, like even reconnecting with their culture of foods. That's one first step, you know, connecting with the land, connecting with the ancestors. You know, that has been part of my healing, and that might be for everyone, but it is important to say, look, we know the healing that we need. We carry that ancestral knowledge and wisdom, but we white supremacy and diet culture has disconnected us culturally, identity, and from Mother Earth, you know? Entonces, ahí está la respuesta para muchas personas a veces, y no cuesta mucho dinero.
No, no, it just, I think, sometimes can feel scary mm-hmm. to trust our intuition when Oof. We've been led astray so many times, you know, mm. but our intuition is so powerful.
Yes, and we need to continue to take care of it. And it's so sacred because mm-hmm. it's so easy to feel, to get that self-doubt and the gaslighting that you're beginning to even, you question your own wisdom, right?
Yeah.
It's a real struggle.
I'm sweating.
So Naomi, tell me, what are your offerings? What do you do? How can people support your work and find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at My Latina Therapist. I work in private practice. I work with, you know, individual adults, kids, families, couples. I really clearly have a passion working with the Latina, Latinx community. And I really like working with sibling dynamics, and like how the power of, you know, that part of the family system can influence the rest of the family. And obviously with body image, confidence, eating disorders, all of that good stuff. So you can, reach me and I'll give you all the information for my email, my work cell. And then you can also stumble across the Cal State Fullerton campus starting in January and find me teaching there. So
Yay, I'm so happy for you. Y nuevamente, I want to thank you once again for being on the podcast and sharing a little bit about your experience and the professional work that you're doing that is m much needed.
Muchas gracias, Doctora Jimenez. Truly, it's been such a pleasure and an honor sharing space with you. It means a lot.
Gracias a ti. And thank you everyone for tuning in. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Nos vemos.
Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, at Dr. Hortensia Jimenez.